FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Welcome. You are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Kerry Lutz, and today's November 20th, 2017. I mean, John, it's 42 days left. Well, hey, as always, questions, comments, be part of the show. Join us. We welcome them. KL at KerryLutz.com and the Twitter feed's at Kerry Lutz. So, question is, there's so many events happening in the world right now. Is tax reform going to happen in reality here? What's happening in Saudi Arabia? And what about Angela Merkel? Looks like her days are numbered. None too soon. Well, John, what do you think? Happy Monday. And I am coming to you from the beautiful city of San Francisco, where I'm at the Silver Gold Summit. And there still are some believers in the city here.
Hey, Kerry. Yeah, you know, a silver gold summit has got to be kind of low key right now, right? Is everybody just sick of waiting for the next big up move?
Yeah, well, it's kind of like when you live by a dam and the dam has been rated deficient and you know it's going to collapse at some point. But it didn't last week and it didn't the week before, and you hope it's not going to next week either. And I think that's what the mining guys are about. And, you know, it's just a continue mission, Charlie Mike, right?
Well, that's all you can do if you're a miner. You know, you've got to keep digging the stuff out of the ground and selling it regardless of the price. But it's got to be really frustrating for these guys because they've been expecting higher precious metal prices, as have you and I, for quite a while now, you know, because all the numbers point that way. You know, we keep on taking on more and more debt and creating more and more currency. The global money supply is soaring and the amount of debt in the world is growing rapidly, which normally points towards higher precious metals prices because they're, you know, they're reciprocals of each other. If we're going to inflate away the fiat currencies of the world, then gold and silver should go up when valued in those fiat currencies. But it's taken a really long time to happen, and it will happen, but it's got to be very frustrating for, well, obviously for investors in mining stocks and for the guys running the mining stocks themselves, because they expect this geyser of cash flow someday in their future, when all of a sudden the price of what they're selling doubles or triples or quadruples. And then all of a sudden they've got all this money pouring in. And that's this thing they're looking at somewhere out on the horizon. And it just won't happen. And it won't happen.
Yeah.
Someday it will happen. You know, it's just taking a really long time.
You know what it's like? It's when you got your little kids in the car and you're on a drive going somewhere. And it's like, are we there yet? Are we there yet? And that's what these guys are like.
Yeah. Well, and I get it. You know, because the numbers, which, you know, if you're a finance guy at all, you grow up trusting that relationships that have held in the past will hold in the future. That's kind of the nature of that gig, right? And these numbers aren't holding up. The relationships are not stable anymore, where it seems that governments can create as much new debt as they want to and coerce or trick the rest of society into borrowing huge amounts of money at the same time. And that doesn't affect asset prices, at least as far as precious metals go, the way you would expect. You know, if fine art is through the roof, a Leonardo da Vinci painting just sold for or almost $500 million this last week. Trophy real estate is through the roof. Most other kinds of, and you know, Bitcoin and the cryptocurrencies are way up. So other things that are normally seen as safe havens, things you buy when you are shifting your money out of fiat currencies, are way up. There's huge demand for them. And somehow precious metals haven't been able to get on that same train, you know, and I think they will eventually. Eventually, the people who have, you know, a Van Gogh and a London penthouse and have seen these things appreciate astronomically are going to say, okay, what else can I put my money into now? And there's really only going to be gold and silver at that point. So the day is coming. It's just frustrating and taking a really long time.
Yeah, totally. Well, you know what everybody at the mining show is talking about, don't you?
Oh, Western Australia?
Well, no, they're talking about Bitcoin.
Oh, yeah, everybody's talking about Bitcoin.
Yeah, everybody here is talking about Bitcoin. And, you know, when you look at that chart, It is the greatest parabolic market in history. Nothing has ever gone up that fast before, John. Has it?
Yeah, it's been astounding. You know, I don't know if nothing ever has. But,
I'm thinking about
nothing
it.
Nothing in our adult lifetimes has done what Bitcoin did.
You know,
in part, that's because it started from next to nothing. But, you know, in part, it's just an idea whose time has come. Okay, cryptocurrencies are, or at least the underlying blockchain technology, just they work. And so they've got a future, but we've got to work out what kind of a future that will be, whether it's, you know, 1,000 different kinds of cryptocurrencies and coins and tokens all doing their thing out there in various niches, or one cryptocurrency pushing the fiat currencies off the field. We'll see. But gold and silver still have a very important role to play at the center of the future monetary system. So they'll be okay. You know, it's just a matter of time for people to catch on.
I'll tell you some people that wish they had a lot of cryptocurrency now, wish they had their entire fortune in cryptocurrency. The Saudi princes who've all been arrested and they're taking away their fortunes now.
Yeah, that's an interesting process. Well, basically what happened was Saudi Arabia ran out of money. You know, they built a society that was based on cheap oil, the proceeds of which flow to this gigantic royal family. You know, these guys are breeding like rabbits, apparently. There are thousands of Saudi princes. Shouldn't there be like two princes in a succession in a normal monarchy? Well, this in Saudi Arabia, there are thousands, and they all get money for free from the oil revenues. But oil revenues are down. You know, oil was $140 a barrel at the peak of the last cycle, and now it's 50 or 60, depending on what measure you're using. That has sliced a big chunk out of Saudi cash flow, but their expenses have stayed the same. So they're going broke rapidly. They're spending their savings in order to prop up the monarchy and keep all the princes happy. And so this version of the monarchy, the guys in charge now, have decided they've got to get some money from somewhere. They can't raise oil prices. So they're just expropriating. They're looking at people that, for whatever reason, they decide to target, throwing them in jail on trumped up charges and saying, yeah, you can get out, but you have to leave your money here. And, you know, that's also a pattern throughout history, is when a dictatorship gets desperate, it starts looking around for other sources of funds, and rich people are a really obvious source. So they find a reason and a way to take stuff away from rich people.
That's always been throughout history. Hey, speaking of dictatorships going to the end of the line, something pretty major happened last week. Mugabe, who's driven Zimbabwe into like one of the major hellholes of the universe, finally, there was a military coup and they said, you're gone. So they put him on TV to make his last speech. And he says, basically, he doesn't mention anything that he's leaving, but he's gone. I mean, they'll kill him if he doesn't go quietly into the night. And that's pretty amazing because the guy's been there 38 years, the oldest leader in the world. He's done immeasurable harm to the Zimbabwean economy, unless you print money. If you're a money printer for the Zimbabwean government, this has been the salad days for you. I mean, this has been the greatest time on earth to print up banknotes for Zimbabwe, because they keep printing them up so fast and adding zeros that you're just cleaning up, assuming you don't get paid in those dollars, right?
Yeah. Well, see, we're seeing Venezuela and some of the African countries go through this process of a strong man taking power and promising lots of things to lots of people, finding that he has no way to deliver on those promises, and then just starts printing money. In other words, just creating lots of currency and giving it to the people that he's trying to placate. But of course, that makes the value of the currency go down. And, you know, this is the fate of all big, comprehensively powerful governments. They eventually, as Margaret Thatcher said, run out of other people's money. And then there's chaos. And, you know, we can laugh at these countries that are further along on this path, but we're headed that way fast. You know, we're doing all the same stuff that that they do, but we have bigger, richer, more resilient systems, which means we get away with it for longer than they could. Same mistakes, though, with the same eventual outcome. You know, we're heading that way. If you just look at the chart of U.S. debt, through the roof, or global money supply through the roof, and or European unfunded liabilities, you know, which brings us maybe to Angela Merkel, who might not be in power much longer in Germany.
Unfunded Angela, you know, as rich as Germany appears to be and as good as their economy appears to be, I think you said before, they're just doing vendor financing to keep this thing afloat and, you know, just promise the errant states, the ones that aren't doing well, anything just to keep them borrowing and to keep them paying interest on their debt. And eventually that little circus has to come to an end too. You know, John, we've talked about it so many times. It's all over the world, whether it's China, all of the corporations, tens of trillions in debt. You know, the only one that isn't like that really is Russia. They paid off their debt. And I don't know what they're waiting for, but hey, maybe they'll be the winners on all this when it hits the fan.
Well, Russia, first of all, is its population is shrinking at a dramatic rate, so they're kind of going away, and they've got a lot of oil. But that kind of makes them like Saudi Arabia. They're dependent on the price of oil. If oil were to drop to $30 a barrel, then Russia would have a cash flow crisis, not a debt crisis, like you said, because they haven't borrowed a ton of money and they've been buying gold. So they've been smart in that sense, but they haven't diversified their economy away from one resource. You know, they are in an oil-based economy.
Yeah.
And so, you know, maybe that's great if oil goes to $100 a barrel, and it's a disaster if it goes down from here. So that's not something you can point to and say, well, Russia has a great future, because you can't tell. And demographics really point in the other direction. If your population is shrinking dramatically and aging at the same time, it's not clear how you generate any kind of growth going forward, because your working age population is smaller 10 years from now than it was 10 years ago. Germany is kind of a fraud. I mean, they're good at what they do. You know, they make things very efficiently of high quality and sell them in the world. So they're good in that sense. But their finances are fraudulent, because a lot of the great numbers that they put up are due to the fact that Italy and Spain and Portugal buy their stuff.
Right.
With money that they borrowed from German banks. So when those guys can't pay the bills, then all of a sudden all that debt goes back on the German balance sheet and they don't look so good anymore. Unfunded liabilities in Europe are slightly different than they are here, because here, at least, we have the pretense of creating trust funds. You know, you and I pay Medicare taxes. And then that goes into a fund, which in theory is supposed to cover us later on when huge numbers of baby boomers are retiring. In Europe, it's pay as you go.
Yeah.
So their numbers don't look so bad in the present, because they're not trying to build up a trust fund or anything. But as baby boomers retire, their cash or their cash flow turns negative in a huge way. And they're going to owe more and more year after year in order to make good on these extremely generous retirement promises that they've made to the baby boomer generation. And that will bankrupt Europe.
Oh, yeah.
The numbers just flat out don't work if you look at what it costs to give 30 years of health care to retiring Germans.
And pensions. The pensions are all underwater. Every single one, whether it's public or private in Europe, they're toast. And, you know, it just shows that there is no way out of it until we get back to sound money, because when you have sound money, it's a lot harder for the politicians to make promises that they can't keep, because there's only so much money and there can't be any more. It's when you don't have sound money and then they can play games with the money system that things really get out of kilter, and you have this mass malady around the world. It's happening all over the place, John. That's what's remarkable, except for a few smaller countries. It's really happening all over. And then you throw in a bunch of migrants coming in, or whatever you want to call them, refugees, that you're paying like $100,000 a piece to resettle them, to pay their welfare, to give them housing, everything else. And this is a prescription for bankruptcy, plain and simple.
Yeah, everywhere. But, you know, if you'd asked Ludwig von Mises in 1971, what was going to happen when we all went off the gold standard simultaneously and created fiat currencies everywhere in the world, his answer would have been exactly what we have now.
Yeah.
Although he might have thought it would have happened, you know, it would be over sooner. This has gone on for a really long time. But basically soaring debt year after year, increasing public sectors everywhere, increasing unfunded liabilities, which are basically lies that we've told people about how our finances are in the present.
Yeah.
All of that is increasing in a completely predictable way based on human nature. You know, we gave ourselves an unlimited credit card globally. And it's a very rare person that can have an unlimited credit card and not abuse it, you know, and we don't have very rare people running the governments of the world right now. They're very common, predictable people who are making mistakes that the average somewhat stupid person makes when they're given too much power. So we're getting exactly what you would expect we would get. And the end is exactly what you think it'll be. You know, it'll be some kind of a currency crisis where we lose faith in these currencies that are being abused so dramatically. And then the game ends because they don't have high-powered money with which to keep kicking the can down the road. They can't continue to borrow because interest rates are up, and they can't cut taxes to stimulate the economy because that just causes the currency to go down faster because nobody trusts their ability to pay off the resulting deficits, et cetera, et cetera. That's what we're headed for. But, you know, we should have been there in 2000. We definitely should have been there in 2007, 2008. Mm. So it's not clear exactly how far we can take this, because we've taken it further than we should have been able to in the first place.
Yeah, well, at some point, there's a day of reckoning, which nobody wants to face. And when that day comes, it ain't going to be pretty. And you have to wonder what they think they can do here. What miracle is going to occur that is going to enable us to avoid the consequences of our economic foibles?
Well, they don't see it that way, I don't think, Carrie. The basic Keynesian model doesn't include debt as an important factor. It looks at aggregate demand. In other words, how much stuff people are buying in the moment, and doesn't really pay attention to the amount of debt it takes to create a given amount of aggregate demand. So as the amount of debt we need to create a given dollar of GDP goes up, that's not really in these models, you know. So I think Yellen and Greenspan and Bernanke are really not as worried as a rational person might be, just looking at the numbers without the blinders of a Keynesian mainstream economics model. There.
Really?
Yeah, and they also expect to be able to get through the next few years using their current tools, and in that way retire with a lot of prestige and a nice pension and leave the problems to their successors. You know, the Fed is already speculating about what to do next. That's also an interesting story that maybe we should have led with this. You know, they're talking about, well, when the next recession comes, we're going to need some new tools, aren't we? Because we've used up all the old ones. So maybe we'll do nominal income targeting. Mm. Where we say the average person should make X amount, or the GDP should be X amount, and we'll just create as much currency as we need to bring that about. Or inflation targeting, where instead of 2% being our target, that's now our floor, and we're going to go above 2%. So we're going to tell the market that we will engineer 3.5% inflation, or 3%, or something like that, and which also leads to the system spinning out of control, because you can't do these things without people seeing it and front running it and short circuiting what you're trying to do. And they'll be buying equities, and they'll probably be buying real estate, and
John,
you know, it's going to be even crazier.
Doesn't this sound like about the stupidest thing in the world you've ever heard of? I mean, really?
Yeah.
Is this moronic or heck?
This is how descents into insanity tend to work, and into criminality. You know, you start with something that seems fairly reasonable and is just a tiny step beyond normal mainstream behavior, and that doesn't work. But then you're stuck out here with the consequences of that new thing you did, and you've got to try something new. And then even more new and even more experimental. And that's where we are. We're just wandering down this slope of crazy, where each new thing seems kind of reasonable because it relates to the thing you just did. It's only a slight increase or a slight extension of whatever it was you were doing before. But the thing you were doing before was crazy. So now you're doing something that's even crazier, but you're only seeing it in the context of what happened last week, not what happened over the last 30 or 40 years, or, you know, or in terms of any kind of theory that actually makes sense of what's going on. You know, you've got a very limited vision, and it seems reasonable to you, but to people standing outside the system, it seems crazy. And that's where we are now. And that's where we will be when the next generation of monetary experiments happen in a few years, you know, when the next recession hits. Yeah.
All right. Well, I guess we'll end it at that. So send us an email, be part of the show, kl@carrylutz.com. John's site is dollarcollapse.com. Sign up for his newsletter, and hey, Twitter feeds @CarrieLutz, and the Facebook page is Financial Survival Network. John, we will catch you next week.
Thanks, Kerry. See ya.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get 3 free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.